Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
The final ruling in the library case, which we've been following fairly closely here on Free Talk Live. The quote-unquote final judgment is in. And also in is the long-awaited SEC versus Ripple ruling by a judge in that case that has been going on for a couple, maybe two or three years at this point. So that is in. These are two fairly large and important cases for the cryptocurrency world. I haven't had a chance to read through the whole library ruling, but I've skimmed through a good chunk of it. And the big takeaway, I think, so far from the library ruling is that Odyssey will not be enjoined. And that was the big question, for me at least, in that particular case, because we knew Library, which is this decentralized, so there's a library protocol, which is a decentralized protocol for the point of sharing media on the internet. That could be videos. It could be audio files. That cannot be taken down. That cannot be enjoined. That is just code that exists online. That's what library at its core is. It was also the Library Corporation. And by the way, with you tonight here, it's Ian.
And Jay.
So there's also the Library Corporation, which had programmers that were working on that code. It had a CEO. It had your typical kind of corporate structure. And there's also something else called the Library Foundation. The Library Foundation wasn't involved in this lawsuit. The code itself obviously can't be involved in a lawsuit. The SEC came after Library, the corporation. Why? Well, because you can target a corporation. It has a board of directors. It has a CEO or whatever, right? Like, it's got some sort of...
A corporation is actually the creature of the state.
That's true.
A corporation exists because the Secretary of State approves a corporate charter or an application for a corporation.
But it has people behind it. There are people who asked for that charter.
Correct.
There are people who filled out the applications asking for the benefit of having the perceived benefit, at least, of having a corporation. So they knew who to go after. They knew where their office was located. And they went after them. And they won. I mean, ultimately, the SEC won the case. They have destroyed the Library Corporation. It has no more employees. It has no money with which to pay its employees. They are going through the process of completely shutting down. They have to pay over $110,000 or $111,000to the SEC, if they even have that. I don't know. I don't know what their finances are. It didn't look very good in December when they filed a report with the court in this case. But the good news is, if there's any good news in this library case, it is that Odyssey, which is the platform that is sort of built on Library, not entirely. Library's involved in Odyssey, but Odyssey's also got central servers where it stores video content. Odyssey's a video sharing platform, kind of like YouTube, but without the censorship that YouTube has. And we've been streaming and we've been posting our content there for a few years now. And so the big question, I think, in the library case, and I have reached out to Jeremy Kaufman to see if we can get him on the show to talk about it in the next few days. I'm sure he's got a bunch of interviews he's in the middle of doing. He's the CEO over there. Just kind of get his perspective on what all this means. But the good news is Odyssey, the SEC wanted to enjoin Odyssey. They wanted to go after Odyssey because Odyssey did come from Library. So Library sort of gave birth to this other corporate entity, this website, odyssey.com, where you can go and subscribe to us by going to video.freetalklive.com. That takes you right to our Odyssey channel. You can subscribe to our channel there. You can also send contributions to us directly through Odyssey, which is a very cool feature that they have as well. But the big question was, were they going to be shut down also? Was the SEC going to be able to enjoin them from sharing library tokens with their users, for instance, which is what Library got in trouble for? Library actually got in trouble for giving away library tokens. So even though they didn't, I mean, they did have a way you could buy the tokens, obviously, but they actually would just give people tokens for just signing up an account, just creating an account with their system.
Yeah, this is like an extreme example of all this stuff is, you know, the evil, flailing, you know, multiple head monster we call the bankers, you know, the den of vipers, as mm-hmm. John Adams referred to them, you know, they're fighting back as hard as they can because, you know, if they don't, they're really, really going to lose. I think they're going to lose anyways.
In the long run,
because the technology is just so much superior and the world is waking up and, you know, people like me are encouraging everyone not to use this fiat dollar because it's, you know, it creates all the problems that we have today are 100% because of fractional reserve banking and money created out of thin air. And all of Jeffrey Epstein's friends, all of his clients, all the people who rape little boys and girls, the child molesters, they get all their power, all their influence, all their authority because they are at the top of the food chain. They are the people that are essentially controlling, you know, the creation of money, how much money there is, at their whims and just creating out of thin air. So, and the thing too with, Jeremy Kaufman, I know his family really well.
Mm-hmm.
And his oldest son is 6 years old. And he did a man camp project at Porkfest. He made an iron coat hook, and the kid was amazing how well he did.
Probably helps that he's homeschooled, right?
Well, so he's homeschooled. Mm-hmm. You know, his dad's a really smart dude. And then also his mom, you know, Rachel, she's a superstar mom. They're just a really good family.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an attack on a good family.
It absolutely is. And it's an attack against the freedom to share information on a wider basis.
That stuff.
I want to continue the discussion here, but we actually have, I believe, Sheriff Hathaway down there in David Hathaway in Arizona on the line here. David?
Yeah, good evening, Ian and Jay. I'd like to talk tonight about the despicable federal sentencing process.
Sure.
I've been through this many times, and I think a lot of people don't understand it. Some of the things that are really bad about it, anybody who's watched Perry Mason thinks that, you know, you don't allow hearsay in a courtroom, but in federal sentencing hearings, federal agents are allowed to use hearsay. In other words, to say things that they've heard from other people. Another thing they've allowed to do is they get designated as expert witnesses, which allows them to speculate and render opinions. But what this all results in is things being added to the sentence. There's a thing called mm-hmm. pretrial services that creates a sentencing report for the judge, and it's all based on points. And right. What this results in is a federal agent can summarize things that were told to him by a paid informant, like a third party who's actually not on the witness stand,
mm-hmm.
and enter this as evidence. And people who are federal prisoners or federal defendants, they come to understand this process, and they're surprised by it. Like, mm-hmm. they're baffled, how can this be that people get sentenced for things that they were never convicted on in court. They never mm-hmm. charged on in court. And there's a word for this that federal prisoners call this ghost crimes or ghost charges, or if it's a drug
yeah,
case.
Yeah, somebody brought this up on the air, I don't know, a few months ago, and we learned it's done a lot in drug cases specifically.
Yeah, and it's done in other cases mm-hmm. too. Like, let me give you an example from a drug case. Say that there's somebody's convicted of an 8-ball of crack cocaine, like 3.5 grams of crack cocaine,
mm-hmm.
and the federal agents actually seize that through an undercover operation. They put the drugs on the table, they charge, and they get a conviction. But what happens is, in the sentencing hearing, a federal agent will get on the witness stand, and he will summarize what he has been told by a paid defendant, a third-party individual, and this is the hearsay. And they'll go to a paid informant, and they'll ask the informant, well, how often do you think this guy deals dope? Oh, about every day. Well, how much does he deal in a week? Like, oh, multiple ounces every week. So how long has he been doing this? Would you say 10 years? Oh, yeah, I'd say at least 10 years. And then they do the math, and they multiply it out, and they wind up charging the guy, sentencing him on 100 kilos of cocaine, even though they only charged him and presented evidence on 3.5 grams of cocaine that they got from him. So they'll call this ghost dope, but they do this on other things, too. Like, say, Ross Ulbricht, they'll get a federal agent to suggest that he was tangentially involved or facilitated a bunch of homicides, which he never did.
Which they did.
And they never charged him with homicide.
Right.
They never presented evidence, or it wasn't even one of the pending charges. So you get a guy who created an internet platform, you know, just something like Google or like Gmail, some way where people can communicate with each other, and they will suggest that through this platform, people may have communicated about contract killings. We're not going to prove it or present any evidence or charge Ross Ulbricht. But at the sentencing hearing, they do this sort of hearsay, and it sort of suggested that Ross Ulbricht was, involved in facilitating contract killings. And then they'll get the federal agent to be designated as an expert witness, which means he's allowed to render an opinion, which otherwise opinions aren't allowed. Hearsay is not allowed. And I saw this happen many times in federal court. And then there's these things called enhancements when pretrial services does a sentencing report. It's based on points that puts you in a certain sentencing range.
Right.
And they can have points that increase or things that reduce the points to make it go higher and lower on the sentencing range.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's different things. Like, there's one called use of a firearm to facilitate a federal crime. And you'll quite often see this in drug crimes where there was not a firearms charge as part of the indictment. It was not proven. It was not even charged. But what they'll do in the sentencing hearing, they'll go to an informant, once again, hearsay, third party, and say, hey, did this guy have a gun? Oh, yeah, he had a gun. Did he have it with him all the time? Well, he would have it in his house. Were some of these drug crimes committed in his house? Oh, yeah, I saw people with dope in his house.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this guy would have used the gun if things went squirrely? Oh, yeah, I'm sure he would have used the gun. So then what they do is they paraphrase that, and they get a federal agent in the sentencing hearing to say how this guy had a gun and how it was, in essence, used to facilitate a drug crime, even though there was never a gun charge.
Wow.
And then they will add points onto the sentencing for use of a firearm in commission of a drug crime. And there's other things they do, too, like, for example, a school zone. If you're within 1,000 or 1,500 feet, sometimes they use those two standards, which is like 3 or 5 football fields from a school. Then they will say federal crime within a school zone.
Mm-hmm.
But this can mean that somebody passed by within several football fields of a school while they had drugs with them, or when they supposedly had drugs, according to an informant. Never charged, never proven, no video, no seizure near a school, and then they could add points onto a drug conviction that might have only been for an 8-ball of cocaine, but they'll add these points on because it was committed, part of the conspiracy happened supposedly within the school zone. But there's other ones too, other enhancements. There's what they call leadership points. And there's this saying, first one on the bus gets the best deal, last one on the bus gets the worst deal. So what this in essence means, you'll charge multiple people in a conspiracy that could be like cryptocurrency conspiracy, federal firearms, drug trafficking, and they try to get people to plea to one of the charges. And so if you plea, they'll give you points off for what's called acceptance of responsibility, meaning like, oh, you saved the government the trouble of preparing for trial and going to trial, and then the last one on the bus loses those points off for saving the government trouble for preparing.
Right, that's why they're going after Arya as hard as they have, because she didn't take the first plea deal offer. She held out for several more months until ultimately deciding to go ahead and take a plea. And surprise, surprise, she's the only one sitting in jail right now of the five or the four defendants who took plea deals. The rest of them got time served, and you know they're sitting at home.
Yeah, and another thing they do to get points off, after you plea to one of those charges so that they you don't get convicted on all the charges, then they do this sneaky little trick called a proffer interview. And they do this all the time if you're the first one on the bus, first, second, third one on the bus. If you don't hold out for your trial and make them convict you on the charges in front of a jury, if you're one of the ones that gets on the bus first and accept a plea deal, they do what's called an immunity offer and give you a proffer interview. So they give you a letter that says you are immune to any additional crimes you admit, but you have to come in and talk to a federal agent. Mm-hmm. You're immune if you admit new crimes. You won't be charged. But you're going to lose these points off for doing a proffer interview if the federal agent decides that you're not fully truthful or if you're not providing what they call, quote-unquote, substantial assistance to the government, meaning you have to point the finger at other people. You have to dump on somebody else where they can use your testimony against that person. And at any point in the interview, the federal agent can decide you're just regurgitating your discovery, things you read on discovery. You're not giving us anything new. I'm going to tear up this proffer, this immunity agreement, and now we can charge you with anything that you admit to, any crimes that you admit to. Where they start out saying you're going to be immune from anything you admit to, but you have to provide substantial assistance to the government to go against other people. Mm-hmm. And this is another way you can get points off your sentencing. They have where you save the government the trouble of going to a trial, you pledge to something, okay, you get points off for that. If you do a proffer interview, you get points off for that. And then on the other end, there's the enhancements, all those things I mentioned where they add points to the sentencing calculation. And, you know, sometimes, like, if they suggest things like suggesting that Ross Ulbricht was facilitating homicides, which he was never charged with, those things are also used to push the judge into the higher end of the sentencing range. If it's not an outright enhancement that's in the federal sentencing laws, it'll push him up into the higher end of the range. And what's so despicable, back how I first started out, is that hearsay is allowed, meaning a federal agent in a sentencing hearing, only in a sentencing hearing, a federal agent can describe third-hand information that he didn't witness from a paid informant, and he can summarize this person saying, oh, yeah, he did gun things. He did all these additional weight of dope. You know, he facilitated homicides. They can say whatever they want. He did a crime in a school zone, and then all of that is put in the form of hearsay. And if you have time, I can give you an example of how this expert witness thing comes into play.
Sure.
I saw this on a lot of drug cases.
He used to be in the DEA, by the way.
Yeah.
For listeners that don't know.
Beyond the Mexican border. Say that there's some migrant worker that's coming into the Imperial Valley in California, and that's his job. And somebody gives him a car when he's going to work and said, you know, hey, Jose, can you drop this off at the shop to get the brakes worked on while you're driving to work? And he says, sure, or they give him a few bucks. So that's the guy's story. He's arrested with, say, 10 kilos of cocaine in the spare tire in the back of the car. Now, the federal agents try to get him to confess, and he doesn't, and there's no pictures, photographs, fingerprints, corroborating evidence to show that the guy driving the car, the migrant worker, had anything to do with the drugs. So what they'll do is they'll get a federal agent on the witness stand and go through this little ritual where they designate him as an expert witness. And this means he's allowed to render opinions and he's allowed to speculate. So then after they go through this, what's your training? How many years of experience do you have? How many cases you've been involved with? And then they make a motion to the judge to designate that guy as an expert witness. And what that means is he can now render opinions and speculations, and then they'll ask the federal agent, in this case I'm using as an example, in your experience, Agent Smith, would a drug cartel give $100,000 worth of dope hidden in a spare tire to some random mope that doesn't know it's there in your experience, does that ever happen? And then the federal agent would say, no, he must have known. He had to have known. And he's allowed to render an opinion and speculate. And that's used as evidence. God. If they don't have a confession or anything else, the federal agent, now designated as an expert witness, is allowed to speculate and render opinions. And then, even though they have no evidence, no confession, no video, no fingerprints, nothing to show that this guy knew the stuff was in the spare tire, it's accepted from the federal agent if he's designated as an expert witness. So that's one of the other despicable tricks.
Wow. I mean, it's just, I'm looking forward to my sentencing hearings.
So I wonder if there's a way to rebut any of these statements or claims made by these federal agents. I mean,
not, Jay, because, look, like, back to Ian's thing, I don't like to talk about that. I don't like to be in a negative mood and get sad thinking about Ian's situation coming up, but it's the same thing. In the sentencing hearing, the federal agent can take the stand. He's not bound by evidence. He's not bound by charges that were ostensibly, supposedly proven, which they weren't proven, but they were charged and proven, and a conviction was rendered by a jury or a judge. He's not bound to that. He can now stray into all these things. He can say there was fraud. In your opinion, this crypto defendant that was selling cryptocurrency, in your opinion, did he facilitate fraud? Yes, he did facilitate fraud, because I know that some people were defrauded by Bitcoin. So would you say, Mr. Agent, Mr. Expert Witness, and you're allowed to do hearsay, would you say anybody dealing in cryptocurrency should know or would know that they are facilitating fraud? Yes, in my opinion, that is the case. So they're allowed to actually enter the idea of fraud, which there's no fraud proven, a guy just selling cryptocurrency, or in the case of Ross Baldrick, enter the idea of homicide into the sentencing as an expert witness and using hearsay, even though it was never proven or charged in court, and then the guy gets sentenced, and then Ross Baldrick gets multiple life sentences because of the suggestion in a sentencing hearing that he was facilitating homicide, or the suggestion in a crypto seller in his sentencing hearing that he was facilitating fraud. And then that pushes the sentence into the higher end of the range. So, I mean, it's just despicable, and I think people who have watched courtroom dramas just think, nah. Yeah, hearsay cannot be used in a courtroom. Well, maybe not during a trial, but in a federal sentencing hearing it can be.
Wow. And does that apply to defense? Can defense witnesses use hearsay, or is it only the federal prosecutors?
No. No, this is only when they're in a sentencing hearing and they're summarizing what's called the relevant conduct. You know, that's the pretrial services writes out a report describing the relevant conduct that's related to the sentencing. And it's not just the things that were convicted. Yeah. It's these things that were in federal informant debriefing reports, all this extra dope or extra fraud or something that supposedly this defendant is responsible
never proved.
For that was never proven and never charged.
Wow. And the judge takes all of that under consideration when issuing the ruling.
Yeah, exactly, because he's allowed to accept the opinions from the expert witness and the hearsay, and there doesn't even have to be the informant on the witness stand. The federal agent can just summarize off the top of his head.
Absolutely insane. David, if you had more, you're welcome to hang on. If not, I appreciate the call. There's more Free Talk Live coming up.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
USA News Update. A brutal heat wave is roasting much of the southern U.S. Heat warnings and advisories are in effect for 113 million Americans. In El Paso and Miami, the highs have been over 100 degrees for nearly a month. The Secret Service says it was unable to identify a suspect in its investigation into cocaine that was found at the White House.
The investigation into the discovery of cocaine at the White House has come to a close, with the Secret Service saying they were unable to identify a suspect. Despite examining numerous individuals who entered through the West Executive Avenue entrance, the law enforcement agency could not pinpoint a person of interest.
Hollywood actors and writers are now on strike at the same time for the first time since 1960. The union representing 160,000 actors announced the decision this afternoon, 2.5 months after the writers walked out. Dave Collins, USA News.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com, or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is a perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American Funding now and see how much cash out you can get. Call 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. That's 800-721-2477. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
It is Free Talk Live. You can join the show here and you can bring up what you want. The phones are open. And the number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. It's Ian and Jay here in the studio tonight. We got more on the library case coming up, plus the Ripple ruling is also in. These are big, big rulings in the various different SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, cases against cryptocurrency companies in the United States. These are two of the very first cases that the SEC has brought. They are now coming to a close, and we'll give you updates on that here in a little bit. Also, this hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is a cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending, and there was some bad news that came out this week about Dash Direct, which we've been telling you about over the past couple of months that we've had this Dash sponsorship on Free Talk Live. Our co-host, Captain Kickass, has used Dash Direct extensively, even prior to Dash sponsoring the show, so he was a big fan of it. And unfortunately, the company that was behind the app is leaving the crypto business. And apparently they were also behind a Cake Wallet gift card app as well for Monero. So there's both the Dash Direct app and the Cake gift card. I don't know what the name of the Cake one is, but the Cake gift card app is also being shut down by this particular company due to government
you know, the general threats. I don't know if they received a specific threat. I don't know the behind the scenes what went on, but apparently they were intimidated by the continuing government attacks on cryptocurrency, and they are bailing out of the business, which is unfortunate because Dash Direct was such a cool app. The good news is it wasn't the only provider of discounted gift cards that you could purchase with Dash. In fact, BitRefill.com has been accepting Dash for years and has a ton of big-name retailers and brands, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and you can even buy prepaid MasterCards. So you could actually live off of your Dash using BitRefill.com, and many of their gift cards also do come with a discount. So definitely worth looking into that. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get. It's easy to use Dash. You can start by learning more at Dash.org. And thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. You can visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. That is Dash.org. As we go back to Sheriff David Hathaway, he's on the line with us, calling from the border county of Santa Cruz County down there in Arizona, where he is the sheriff of that county. You were telling us about the ghost drugs nonsense that goes on at some of these federal sentencing hearings, and that is just absolutely ridiculous. But before you continue, I know, Jay, you wanted to, say something to the sheriff, make sure we get that out there. So
go ahead. Yeah, I got a couple things. I wanted to ask you some questions about confidential informants, but first, I'd like to thank you for your, you sent me a letter and a nice little contribution to help put on Man Camp,
nice.
I appreciate that. Man Camp was got great reviews from parents and just people in general. In fact, there was that news reporter that was at Porkfest hanging out with Aria. You remember her? I think she was from one of the Boston papers.
Yeah, I met her.
Do you remember what paper she was from?
I don't think. I feel like it was the Globe, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But she was from like a very popular big Boston paper.
I haven't seen the story published yet, so I don't know.
And she interviewed me quite a bit, which was cool. But yeah, it was a great time. One dad told me that all the kids leveled up their character in the game of life.
Nice.
And I told the guy, yeah, my dad used to say that was called manning up.
Yeah. Well, you know, thank you, Jay, for the kind note there. And we have 9 children, and we still have our 16-year-old son at home. And we were just thinking about the logistics of getting back there. And I know he would have loved Man Camp. And we do live in a ranch environment here. We do have a ranch and do ranch work, you know, type things, working on the well and the fences and cutting firewood and, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we were trying to make it happen, figure out a way to get to Forkfest and Porkfest, and it just it didn't work out. But I'm glad that you had a successful Man Camp, and I loved your description of the coat hooks and just letting the kids get a drill and get a hammer and just, you know, things that maybe I take for granted or you take for granted, but you think a lot of city kids, a lot of modern kids just kind of glued to their devices. Mm-hmm. They don't get to experience that. Just like getting a battery powered drill and just screwing nails into a log or something like that. So I appreciate you doing that.
Yeah. We have a stump that I'm letting my kids screws into and nails into. That's just going to get dug up someday. And it's just kind of a tree that was cut a few years ago. The stump's not really rotted yet. And it's like, hey, you guys want to do this? Go for it. You know, and it's just good practice. And so, you know, I am planning on spending a little bit of time in Arizona this year. You know, we do a little bit of, my where I'll be is in Oro Valley. My mom lives there. It's not too terribly far from where you are. And I'd be happy to come to your ranch, and I'm sure if we did a little bit of outreach, we could find someone who would let us borrow a forge and all kinds of blacksmithing equipment. And, you know, especially if it's like some old guy who would just love this, or any of these guys love to see kids work this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I suggest this to them, and they're like, oh, yeah, we can do that. And you know, part of what I want to do with this, you know, Man Camp thing is, like, everybody who's got a trade, should do this. For example, I had a neighbor that was, when I was like, from the time I was, in like fifth grade to like a senior in high school, this guy lived across the street from my house. he was really into muscle cars. He always had like two or three muscle cars he was working on, and he was rebuilding engines and transmissions. And me and a handful of kids, he used to let us hang out there and help and watch, and like that really like got my my interest in like just mechanics and stuff. But the guys like that who are just working on their, you know, their hobby. You know, this guy worked in a factory. And his hobby was, you know, muscle cars. And, you know, every night till, you know, 10, 11 o'clock at night during the summertime and on the weekends, there'd be three, four kids over there just hanging out, the teenagers. And he was happy that we were there hanging out in his shop, having interest in what he was doing. And we weren't out causing trouble or, you know, drinking or whatever. And so anybody could do this. Anybody who's into blacksmithing, anybody who's a mechanic, anybody who's like a carpenter. I mean, even like a guy who's an electrician could, you know, start teaching young kids about electricity with little mock setups, or even like wiring up, you know, houses and, you know, just and you know, 200 years ago, every kid had so many competent skills. Like 200 years ago, every kid could harness a horse that was 12 years old.
Yeah, well, like the, you know. My grandparents and my wife's grandparents all built their old their own houses, and I know old guys like you, not like you're not an old guy, but I know old guys that have this attitude that if a young person has any spark of interest, they'll just take all the time in the world. They'll show them how to reload ammo or how to work on a car. Just like to take some young person under their wing and help out. So, you know, we could come up with people like that. And some of the things you were saying reminded me back when I went to high school. I went to public school, and I had a history teacher that said he knew I lived on a ranch and I milked cows every day and we butchered cow. He said, could you come butcher a chicken in front of this class? Because these kids, they go eat their, you know, fried chicken from Kentucky Fried, and they don't know where this comes from. And my dad is, he's passed away now, but he's a lawyer besides being a rancher. And he's like, you know what? One of these touchy-feely parents would wind up suing us and saying that you gave their child trauma if you cut the head off the chicken, and they're running around the classroom spurting blood all over the place. He said, no, I don't think you should do this. But the teacher had that right idea, teaching the kids how to face the reality of life. You're going to McDonald's, you're eating a cheeseburger, you're eating fried chicken, but you don't know where the stuff comes from. He wanted them to have a wake-up call, but I think the public school environment wasn't the right way, where you have a bunch of kids held captive that are probably city kids, and they got their moms and dads that would be all ready to sue me and my family and the school board for traumatizing their kid.
Yeah, I was just going to sign a waiver.
Yeah, there is definitely a lot of so many people. Like, so there's a dairy farm that we go to about an hour away, and I've got some pictures of Cypress actually helping milk a cow. And these people, they're in Charlestown, New Hampshire. They're a really good family. They're, you know, there's like, you know, grandma's in her 70s. You know, the mom's about my age, in her 40s. And, you know, mom's got two or three sisters. And they have like a dozen of their own, you know, nieces, nephews, kids there. They're from, you know, 2 years old to 20 years old. And they're all doing this stuff around there. And I'm like, wow, you guys should like really, I tell them, you know, what I'm doing with like the band camp and the homeschool co-op. And so next time I go there, they're like, oh, I talked to my insurance agent about having kids come over and, like, you know, doing farm chores and, you know, just, like, you know, scraping up the calf pens where the calves were. You know, all this work that you have to do on a farm. And
I told them no.
And the insurance agent is like, well, we're going to have to write, like, a special rider. And they're like, God. Well, she's like, well, what do you think it would cost? You know, and they're like, oh, this is probably going to be like, you know, is this like a school thing or something? And they're like, well, we don't know what it's going to cost, but, you know, I can imagine it'd be like, you know, $10,000 a year to like have this kind of like liability insurance to, you know, let some kids. So it really spooks a lot of people. You know, I could lose my farm, you know, and things like that. And,
so they didn't do it. Right?
Well, they're very afraid. I mean, and like
they can have their family members work out there, no problem. But bringing somebody who's not in the family, that's the problem.
Right.
And, I have relatives like that too. We're a ranching family, and I have relatives that are scared to death of, you know, anyone coming over to ride a horse. You know, like, oh, you got horses? Can we go ride a horse? But just knowing the potential liability of, you know, everybody is so, you know,
litigious,
crazy, or litigious. Yeah. that, you know, and then, you know, if you did come out here, Jay, and we could see if we could scrounge up Ernie Hancock, too, if he's not, like, far away somewhere driving around in a bus somewhere. But, you know, and, you know, he's Arizona person, too.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
on his podcast back when it was called Freedom's Phoenix, and he's reached out to me again, and I haven't got back to him about doing his thing again. But maybe we could scrounge him up, too, if he's back in Arizona sometime.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
If you come out here.
Yeah, I plan on coming out there for the winter. I actually have a guy who could take care of my property possibly for up to 6 weeks, which is really awesome.
Hmm.
There is a chance that we could go to Anarchapulco also. As for Ernie, Ernie would probably be very much down. He'd probably even want to run the love bus, you know, over to your place. And he's all about this stuff, and you know, Ernie actually participated a bit in Man Camp this year. He was, you know, helping a couple of kids make a project, and Ernie's good at that. You know, he's a grandpa of over a dozen kids, and you know, he's just, you know, he's a real hands-on guy. He's handy, and Ernie would like you and I to do a podcast with him. Actually, is what he told me about at Pork Fest. Yeah.
That'd be cool. And, you know, I can't remember, Jay, when the Jackalope Freedom Festival is, what time of year that is. But,
August.
You know, I don't know if you've ever been to that. I've been meaning to go to that. That's an Arizona kind of smaller
equivalent
of Pork Fest. But
I thought that was wintertime. I thought that was wintertime, no?
So it's where it is in Arizona. It's at Boca Meadows, which is about 9,400 foot elevation, I think.
So it's cool.
And it's during rain monsoon season. So basically you set up everything like it's going to rain. And I mm-hmm. did go to Jackalope two times. I went in 2015. I went in 2016 when I was living in Colorado because it was only like a day drive from Colorado, so it wasn't horrible. It was 800 miles. But it's in what they call the rim in Boca Meadows. If you look at Phoenix on the map, Boca's about 2:30. If you look at it like a clock, Boca's at about 2:30. Boca Meadows, it's up, I can't remember, Huber Overgaard is near there, but it's north and it's at high elevation, so it's actually very comfortable.
Oh, that's nice. Okay.
There.
Very cool. I know, David, you'd wanted to talk about human trafficking as an issue. It's certainly something that comes up a lot when it comes to border communities. It's become this buzzword in political circles that I've even heard up here in New Hampshire. Like, for instance, when there's been a proposal to legalize or decriminalize prostitution, the people who oppose it love to trot out this idea of human trafficking, and they seem to think that every woman or man who is engaged in prostitution these days is somehow a victim of these dastardly human traffickers. And of course, the actual prostitutes come up and, you know, they speak out. Not the ones from New Hampshire. It's usually ones from surrounding states that will come up, because obviously the ones in New Hampshire don't want to reveal themselves because it's prohibited. But, they have, like, sex work spokespeople that come in and they say, no, this is something that, while there are people who are victims of human trafficking, not to say that doesn't exist, the bulk of the people in prostitution, they say, are doing it on a voluntary basis. They're choosing to because it is a lucrative business. They're not doing it at the point of a gun or the threat of their family being sliced up by some Russian mafia. So, you know, what was it you wanted to say about that issue?
Yeah, it's totally a bogus thing, and the conservatives, especially conservative Christians, get mad when I bring this up. What has happened is conservatives are looking for something to get away from the label of racist when they want to build walls on the border, and when they don't want Mexicans to come in or Guatemalans to come into the U.S. Mm-hmm. to work. These are migrants that are coming in here to work. So they need another explanation. So what they've come up with is this idea of human trafficking, human slavery, human smuggling, sex trafficking, child trafficking, to try to make it sound like they're concerned for human rights. That's mm-hmm. why they're opposed to Mexicans coming in. That's why we put Border Patrol in our church bulletins. Pray for Border Patrol. They're mm-hmm. like the new Messiah, like the new Jesus. And all across the country, it's like this in these conservative Christian congregations. But it's just totally bogus. And mm-hmm. it's a thing that there's now grant money from Washington available. And both conservative and liberal groups have, you know, fallen for this hook, line, and sinker, you know, as if oh, there's this thing, these groups that are enslaving people and dreaming and bringing them in and bringing little girls and bringing little boys and bringing people in and picking people in, forcing them to work, you know, to pick vegetables in the field. And it's actually the total opposite. You know, when you prohibit something, you then there's always free market solutions that pop up. So when they prohibit people from crossing the border, there's these guides. Some people call them coyotes. Some people call them mules. It's a free market creation where you can pay somebody that knows the route and knows how to get you into the U.S. And as a matter of fact, there was a survey done last year of people who had used a guide. And, of course, the people on the other side of this issue would call them a human smuggler and act like they're forcing people into slavery. But they used a guide. They paid somebody. There was a survey, and they said 75% of them said they were very happy with the services provided by the guide, and 50% said they would recommend them to a relative. So this is like a free market solution, but it's been totally demonized, and they had to find a way to demonize it that doesn't sound like you're a racist. But if I could, like, maybe paint a picture of, do a little analogy, like, say, for example, you hear a story about, oh, there was a U-Haul truck, and there was people that died in the back from the heat.
Yeah, you hear about those things.
Suffocated to death. You know, they'll say things like this, these dastardly human smugglers. But what it's really like, let's say that there was some Jews in World War II living in an attic in Nazi Germany, hiding from the Gestapo. And then let's say there was a family that was living in that house, shielding them. And then if you have the Nazis go through the neighborhood with a bullhorn saying, anybody who's helping to hide Jews, we're going to arrest you. And say they run off the family that was protecting these Jews and giving them food, passing food up into the attic. And let's say the Jews freeze to death up in the attic because the people that were taking care of them, because they were made illegal by the government, the people taking care of them were run off or, you know, demonized or threatened with arrest. So, you know, those kind of things happen where there will be Border Patrol coming and raiding somebody or threatening to raid somebody or swarming in on a group. And then, you know, the people who were protecting these people and guiding them through the wilderness because they didn't know the way into the U.S. and providing them a safe house to stay in. Every now and then, those people are scared off because Border Patrol comes in and they have lookouts and they see them coming in. And every now and then, they beat feet and they get out of the area, you know, because they're going to be thrown in jail for 15, 20 years. So, you know, I think that analogy would kind of make it clear that these people are providing a market service. They're not just evil people that are trying to victimize these people that are coming into the country. They will charge them money and they will put themselves at risk. The guides will put themselves at risk, escorting a group into the U.S., providing transportation, hiding them in a vehicle in the trunk of a car or in the floorboards of a big truck or something. The more draconian the government gets, the greater lengths they have to go to hide these people and to move them through remote, inhospitable areas that are cold or hot.
I want to quibble with one thing here, David, and that is you described it as a free market, and the reality is it's a black market, right? Like these services are only being provided because the Border Patrol exists, because the border restrictions exist. If you could just simply come here, then the coyotes or the guides or, you know, however bad or good they might be, they'd be out of a job for the most part, except for, you know, you hire somebody to drive you across, just like anybody else that doesn't have a car would do that. But here they have to be concealed.
It's kind of like the same analogy when you drive drugs underground or substances underground.
Right.
Then they'll say, oh, you may use some drug that's been adulterated with something that has a contaminant in it, and you may get poisoned. Well, that's because you drove the market underground, and they can't have labels.
Right.
They can't have reviews on Yelp or Amazon reviews or Angie's List or something where these people live on their reputation if you allow the market to come out in the open. But, yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, like, and your point is well taken that these conservatives that are currently talking about the human trafficking, they're doing the same thing with fentanyl right now. I've seen a lot of these right-wingers that are advocating for the U.S. military to be used against the cartels, which would be the most insane escalation of the war on drugs I think, to date. And I'd love to hear you weigh in on that as well. But they're doing the same thing where they're trying to pose as though they care about the drug addicts. That all of a sudden that these conservatives who have been locking up drug addicts and drug users for decades upon decades, we're talking about millions of our countrymen who have been thrown into prison cells. And, of course, the liberals are doing it too. The politicians. But right now it's the conservatives that are really the ones rattling the war sabers to start attacking the cartels down in Mexico, saying that fentanyl is an invasion into the United States and a quote-unquote attack against the people, as though all of a sudden these conservatives care about drug addicts. It's just so ridiculous.
Yeah. And they try to conflate the idea of migrants coming over to work, which in my area, that's what they're all doing, and, you know, very soft-spoken, family-oriented people. Most of them are Catholics, and they have good manners, and they're just very hard workers. They'll conflate that with the idea of, you know, drug smugglers to try to make them think all these dirty Mexicans are bringing in fentanyl and poisoning all of us. But they use that same rhetoric, this human rights, like we're benevolent, we're going to save them. Look at the wars in the Middle East. They said the same thing. They described the American troops as liberators. Mm-hmm. We're going to go in there, and they're going to embrace us. And they would love to take a picture of a guy all kitted out in all his camo and his Kevlar helmet, handing a piece of candy to some brown kid, you know, and being like, look, you know, we're like liberators. They're welcoming us here. But in the meantime, they have the embargo on all the war imagery. You know, you can't show that in the American media. You can't show people being blown to smithereens by cluster bombs or, you know, by anything else. You can't show any of that because that shows the reality, but they're continually on the lookout for that type of imagery. They do that here, too. The Border Patrol Union runs the Border Patrol. They have a union. You may think the unions went away in the federal government with Reagan's thing with the FAA, you know, air traffic controllers. No, no, no. Border Patrol is run by a union, and they do a bunch of press releases, and they're always doing these things like, look, a Border Patrol agent rescued this lost dog, and they'll put, like, I'll take a bunch of pictures and put it up on the website. Like, they're these benevolent crusaders that are out there trying to help people. But, yeah, it couldn't be farther from the truth, you know. They're not out there, you know, human rights advocates.
Not at all. In fact, I am curious, as a border sheriff, somebody who's down there in the midst of all of whatever's going on in any given day, if the U.S. military were to be utilized for attacking the drug dealers or the cartels down in Mexico, how do you think that would change the danger to the average American from the drug cartels? Because my understanding is right now they're kind of left alone, right? Like the cartels usually only target other cartel people, don't they?
Yeah. For example, like look at when DEA had heavy involvement in Mexico, and they still have involvement in Mexico and Latin American countries, and I've done that too in my past. When there was the more presence of DEA down there, the drug dealers would start kidnapping random gringos, you know, like they kidnapped missionaries, and they would incarcerate them in a house, they beat them up, they kill them, and it puts regular Americans more at danger, just the more suspicion that you're here to kill us or end our way of life.
David Hathaway, he's an author, he's a sheriff, wrote a great book about immigration. You can check that out on Amazon. Highly recommend it. David, thanks for checking in with us here tonight. Really appreciate hearing from you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Ian.
Yep, he's down in Santa Cruz County in Arizona. We're going to continue. Hour number two is coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Tehibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.